On this week's Big Tech Show, you might not think it could happen to you, but our guest this week explains how a significant number of Irish people may be falling victim to romance frauds online.
Victims can feel a misplaced sense of shame. People can blame themselves. They feel embarrassed, and so they don't want to tell family, friends. They don't want to report it to the police. In some cases, of course, the victims are already in relationships. They're married. They have an extra reason to keep that quiet.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by international best-selling author Hemant Sunim, telling us what to do when things don't go your way.
When we are, you know, very young and have a first love and the first love did not work out, we feel as though this is the end of the world. However, we learn that is not the case. We move on. We find some other people. So we begin to see that when things don't go your way, maybe it's not the end.
As ever, we're available on all podcast platforms.
This is an Irish independent podcast.
I would fully expect Monaghan to go in with a certain amount of belief that they're going to play the game on their terms and make life difficult for Dublin. They will think that they'll give themselves a full chance to get to an All-Ireland final. Not sure they'll get it done, but I don't. They won't roll over and they will absolutely relish the shot. Some people might cower away from it. I think that Monaghan team, Monaghan of the last 10 years, doing as well as they are and everything with the resources that Dick doesn't like, being a smaller county, they will relish this on Saturday week.
It had been billed as the most open football championship in 20 years, but as the dust settles on the quarter-final weekend, it looks like Kerry and Dublin have pulled away from the chasing pack and are on course for a potential All-Ireland final meeting. Welcome to the Throwin' Football Show. Will Slattery here, and I'm delighted to be joined by Frank Roach and Dunica Boyle for our chat looking back over all the action in Croke Park over the weekend. Also a reminder that the new independent.ie GAA show, Breaking Ball with Philly McMahon, will be released every Saturday for the rest of the championship with interviews and insights from the GAA world, and that can be watched on the Indos YouTube channel and independent.ie. But for now, we will look back at the weekend that was. And Dunica, were you surprised with how things played out in Croke Park over Saturday and Sunday? I know we were talking off air when the draw was announced last Monday. Everyone was excited. It seemed like the football championship was with a roar into life. Kerry Tyrone, Dublin Mayo, their rivalries have often produced absolute all-time great games. But we didn't get that. We got Kerry and Dublin pulling away, showing their teeth and kind of emerging as the two maybe heavyweight teams left in this championship. But were you surprised with how things played out versus what you maybe expected going into it?
Definitely not surprised, Will. Probably a little bit disappointed. You know, if you look at the results, you know, I would have fancied Kerry to beat, I covered Kerry against Louth. I would have fancied them to beat Tyrone. I would have fancied Dublin to come good at this time of year. And Derry to beat Cork as well. Armagh Monaghan was an awful lot closer than certainly the bookmakers thought. Wasn't really surprised we got that, whichever way that went, I wasn't going to be surprised, and wasn't surprised that they needed penalties. But definitely disappointed, because if you go back to last Monday morning and the way the draw fell, Dublin Mayo, fantastic. Tyrone and Kerry in the history of that fixture, brilliant. Armagh Monaghan being a local rivalry as well, and then Cork Derry. So we were really teed up for something brilliant this weekend. Two games, Saturday, Sunday, Croke Park, 70 plus thousand fixed for both days, full house yesterday as it turned out. And do you know what? Two of the games were drab. They were pretty dour. Armagh Monaghan was tense and towards the end. But if you didn't have a dog in the fight, you know, there wasn't a whole lot to draw you into it until maybe the extra time and the penalties. Cork Derry, which I worked at yesterday, wasn't a particularly good or entertaining game. Tyrone had taken care of business fairly early on against Tyrone. You got the sense early enough in that Tyrone couldn't whip up that tempest that they usually reserve for Kerry. And then Dublin Mayo for first half, yeah, that was good, and it was finally balanced and all that. But Dublin took care of business in the third quarter. So you could argue that maybe the first half of Kerry Tyrone and the first half of Dublin Mayo were about as exciting as it got. And after that, like I covered Cork Derry yesterday, very forgettable game. And Armagh Monaghan penalties were great, great drama, great tension. But as a game, as a spectacle, it was pretty forgettable. So yeah, a disappointing weekend, because I thought we'd get at least one blockbuster. I had a suspicion we'd get two. When they announced yesterday that Hawkeye was broken or was being stood down, I was there. This is nothing sure what's going to happen, that there's going to be a contentious point decision that's going to decide the game one way or another. I thought it was written in the stars. But we got nothing of the sort, and more's the pity.
Yeah, Frank, we'll drill into the games in a bit more detail in a moment. But, you know, what are your takeaways from the weekend? You know, anything that Dunnock touched on there that you agreed with? Or?
Well, very much. The best football of the weekend was probably the first half of Dublin Mayo. I'm not even sure that the first half of Kerry Tyrone was at that level. Even though Kerry only led by 3 points at the break, there was still a very clear sense that, you know, they had done the groundwork. Their defence was definitely getting on top of Tyrone, and you were waiting for them to push on, and that's what happened. Whereas at halftime, there was a sense that, you know, even though Mayo were a point down, they had their full forward division and how they'd worked the ball into them. It caused a lot of grief for Dublin in one-on-one situations. I mean, all 8 Mayo points in the first half stemmed from the full forward line. Not just that they scored them all, but all the frees were fouls on the inside trio. But Dublin had settled in the few minutes before halftime. They'd got the last 3 points. And basically, 5 minutes into the second half, when Colly Basquel pounced for a second goal, it was game over. Time to go home. My real takeaway from the weekend was the fact that the two old empires, Kerry and Dublin, have definitely reasserted themselves. Now, in fairness, Kerry are the holders. It's not as if the question is how much did they have to reassert themselves. But there have been question marks about them at different stages through this summer. None more so than when they lost so poorly to Mayo in Killarney. And obviously the big Loud out the gate the last day, but people are still saying, that's Loud. What will Kerry be like when the big questions are asked? And on Saturday, the big questions weren't asked, but Kerry were still very, very good.
Dunnock, I know, like, it's kind of funny now to think that we were, as I said at the start of the show, teeing it up as the most open championship we'd had in so long. But I do think that, you know, Mayo in particular, and Galway to an extent, we'll just reflect on that final round robin game where things went a bit haywire, and it meant Mayo had to play not only 3 weekends in a row, but had to play Galway last weekend, a very tough game that they won, but then not ideal preparation when Dublin were able to put the feet up for a week. And it was all in Mayo and Galway's potential to have maybe a more favourable draw and that extra rest week. So I don't know if we were necessarily wrong to think it was very open. Just
no,
the way
I think it was absolutely fair comment, I think, at the time, for all the available evidence. Now, we did say on this several times that, you know, Dublin were, for this time of year, in or around it, Dublin, this is when they need to be coming right. You know, they were going to cruise through Division 2. They were going to cruise through the Leinster Championship. The nature of the All-Ireland Series with 3 out of 4 teams coming out of the group, you know, they were going to be okay until around this time of year. Admittedly, I thought to be going better. We might have seen something like we saw yesterday before this. I might have thought they'd hit the ground or maybe found a new level of performance a little bit earlier than yesterday. But they came good at exactly the right time against exactly the right team. But in terms of, like, it was very open. And I think everyone was looking at this, facing into this new calendar for the first time. And I suppose you had 3 top high-end championship matches. And as you mentioned, some counties made life very hard on themselves when they were in control of their own destiny. And probably paid the price. I know John Cleary yesterday after the Cork game, he was saying, look, we just didn't have the energy levels that we had before. You know, it looked like that way with Tyrone as well. And it probably looked that way with Mayo as well. So it's very difficult to hit those heights 3 weeks in a row as some of those teams are trying to do. And that extra week, like even Jack O'Connor doesn't give away too much after the Loud game. And they'd kind of, to be honest, the stars aligned for him to finish top of the group and get the extra week. Like he was saying, I'm delighted with that, which is not the kind of thing you hear from Jack. He generally sort of like plays it calm and plays it down and plays it cool on most things. But he wasn't hiding his delight that they had the extra week and it showed.
Yeah, Mayo, Tyrone and Cork all played 3 weeks in a row. All 3 of them, I think, were a point down at halftime and they all faded, you know, pretty substantially in the second half. So it's hard to know if it's a direct correlation, but it has to be some sort of a factor. Frank, to kind of maybe focus a little more on Dublin Mayo for the moment, Colm Keyes was writing today, I think, that it was, in his opinion, the best Dublin performance under Desi Farrelly since the 2019 final replay winner over Kerry. Would you go along with that? Was that the best Dublin look for you in a long time?
I think it probably was. Now, probably more specifically the last 40 minutes. But, I mean, if you go through even the 2020 Championship, when Desi won in his first year was such a strange affair. You know, there was no second chances. You won Leinster, which some of them were always going to do in a canter. Went to an All-Ireland semi-final against Cavan, which they won easily. And they played very well in a composed way, in this, you know, against Mayo in the final, that they never looked like they were going to lose that game. But there was no game you could pick out from 2020 that was, you know, a standout of Dublin being asked, you know, asked tough questions and coming out and delivering. And obviously we know how the last two seasons have panned out for them. So I think that's definitely fair comment. I mean, what they produced in the second half against Mayo yesterday was probably as close as we've seen to the 12 minutes of destruction that they visited upon the same county, Mayo, in the 2019 semi-final. It was slightly different, but, you know, it was similar. And I mean, the agenda was set from the throw-in. Dublin won it. James McCarthy came away with the ball, drove hard at the defence, fed Paul Mannion, who scored off his weaker foot. And from then on, Dublin just took off. And I mean, the interesting thing was that Mayo had won the throw-in for the first half. And that almost got them into their stride quickly. But the second half was pretty close to vintage Dublin. James McCarthy, I thought, really set the agenda. It was similar to maybe his second half against Kerry last year in different circumstances where Dublin were, you know, battling and doing their damnedest to stay alive in the championship. But he was absolutely brilliant. I mean, Colly Baskell, in fairness to him, yesterday didn't come out of nowhere. His form in this championship has been really, really good. And I suppose people were saying, or were asking, will Colly still be able to step up in the really, really big games? And he did again yesterday. And as we speak here, if you were picking an all-star team at the moment, I think Colly Baskell would probably be in it. He has scored really heavily in lots of matches. I'd say at least four of the Dublin matches in this championship, he's been up there among the leading scorers. And his drive and dynamism, you know, has really added a new dimension to Dublin, even though he's been around the block since, I think, 2016.
Donegal, for you, what kind of prompted that third quarter when the game really flipped? Because at halftime, there was no indication that Dublin were going to be running away with it like 10, 15 minutes later. I know they kicked the last 3 points. But as Frank mentioned earlier, like the Mayo forwards were causing, you know, a lot of damage, arguably as damaging a full forward line Mayo have had against Dublin in terms of the scores they were racking up. Why do you think it changed so massively, so quickly in that second half?
Probably, as we touched on earlier, I'd say that Dublin had that energy about them that when, you know, when the legs stop and they start and have to go again, you know, it's sometimes very hard for tired legs to get going again. The goal was obviously very important. And, you know, I suppose when Dublin get on that flow in Croke Park, we talk a little bit Mayo and this, but when Dublin get on that flow in Croke Park and the crowd is behind them, you know, they do develop a momentum very quickly and to kind of put that game away fairly efficiently in that period as well. So, you know, and I think we saw with a few of them, those teams that had played the 3 weeks in a row, as soon as the game got away from them, it got away from them very fast and in a few minutes. And, you know, I think that's an interesting pattern. Like, we have a very small sample size. This is the first year of this championship and this format. But I wouldn't be terribly surprised if we were seeing that again, because we're looking at a scenario now where fellas coming in off two heavy knockout games like Do or Die and are 7 days from the next one. And we've seen it before, obviously, in the back door and all that, but not quite at this level of competition. Because even if you look at the Super 8s, Super 8s was league format. So, you know, there wasn't quite the same high wire stuff. So I think in this time next year, I think we could be having a very similar conversations about the team that come through the preliminary quarterfinals, and maybe we'll see them fade off and be burned off in the last second half or the last quarter of these quarterfinal matches.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if teams maybe take it a little more seriously or prioritise it slightly different than round robin last year, because we've seen, as you mentioned, how crucial it was to get the extra rest week to maybe even be at home in the preliminary quarterfinal. And maybe that was the undoing of certain teams this time around. Frank, how do you think Kevin McStay and Mayo will reflect on 2023. I think it didn't take long for Kevin McStay to get up to speed with the kind of the rhythms of being in the Mayo camp, because there was highs, there was lows, there was a league win over Galway in the final, there was a great win over them in the preliminary quarterfinals, but there was, you know, the loss to Cork, which was very disappointing, losing to Roscommon and Connacht, and obviously finishing with a pretty heavy defeat to Dublin as well. He was saying it was more positive than negative. What's your view on how they look at it?
Well, you've kind of touched on it. It was a season of all kinds of everything for Mayo. And I suppose there have been signs of progress, definitely, in the blooding of some players who have adapted quite quickly, especially in the defensive end. But I think the two things basically caught up with Mayo yesterday were, firstly, actually, their carelessness in letting top players in the group slip, because they should have finished first after beating Kerry. They didn't, having been 6-0 against Cork with whatever 15 minutes to go. And that created a way more difficult route to an All-Ireland semi-final for them. I mean, they potentially would have been playing, we'll say, if it was Tyrone in the draw, if it worked out the same way. You would have probably fancied them to take Tyrone this time. They didn't. They were facing the Dubs, having played a really hard game the week before against Galway. And, you know, they just, whether it was a case that they ran it out of juice, that was definitely part of it. But Dublin turned it on early in the second half and Mayo weren't able to live with them. But I thought the other big factor with them is that too many of their, we'll call them key players or in players in key positions, have been struggling for form in recent weeks. I mean, even a few guys who played really well against Kerry, I'm thinking Matthew Ruan and Jack Kearney, you know, their form has kind of fallen off a cliff really in the last few matches. And that the midfield and half forward area was where they really, really struggled yesterday. I mean, I wouldn't blame the inside forwards. They were getting great ball in the first half. And when they were getting ball in one-on-one situations, they were causing trouble. How many times in the second half yesterday did you see any of those three forwards receive a ball in what we call a level of space, or where they were able to take on their man? They didn't. Dublin, Mayo could barely win a ball for the first 6 or 7 minutes after half time. And Dublin punished them time and time again in that period. And the game was gone from them.
I think when Mayo, you know, this week or maybe over Christmas or whatever it is, and the drill down to the analysis of that game yesterday, like, if you look at the goals, like, you know, the first goal, Bascal's goal, the first one, Pádraig O'Hara is sort of, you know, he's maybe Bascal has him on the run a little bit. Pádraig O'Hara misjudged the flight of the ball by a good distance, to the extent where Bascal catches a long ball in and around the square, and he catches it with in the pocket, not over his head. It catches in the pocket like that, into his chest, and has time to go and stick it in the net. So you're looking at that from Mayo point of view, and you're thinking, well, we absolutely could have done an awful lot better there. Just break it away, get it away from there, do whatever else, but just deal with it in the first place. And they didn't do it at all. The second thing that happened was Jordan Flynn's goal. That was at least contentious. You know, I think there's been second look at it, and, you know, you can have what you... But, like, I think there is a question mark there at very least, so they missed out on that one. The second Basquel goal was sort of self-inflicted as well, as Sam Callanan tried to see the ball out over the line and didn't, got his pocket picked by Mannion. One thing led another, Basquel patched it into the net. There's another thing, you know, that Mayo will look at and say, Jesus, in that moment, we could have done an awful lot better. And then on top of that, you have the chance that fell to Owen McLaughlin, and when he just flat out should have scored and he hit the outside of the post and it came back out. So you're not going to get everything. Not everything is going to go for you. But there's 12 points in those 12 points on the board in those particular incidents that could have went either way, and all four of them went against Mayo. So I think, and as I say, some of them self-inflicted. So I think Mayo will look back at that and go, geez, we did ourselves absolutely no favour. And let's not take away from Dublin. They were brilliant. I agree with Colm Keyes' piece this morning that Dublin looked as good as they have in years. It's the 2019 game, as he mentioned. But I think if you're Mayo, you're looking at that and saying, like, well, we have to, whatever about how good Dublin were, we have to get our own house in order. And there was some major self-inflicted wounds there.
But the other thing, Dunnock, I'd say is that's history repeating itself, because Absolutely, if you go back to the last decade of Dublin v Mayo, nearly every time Dublin seemed to get two goals. And more often than not, there were defensively cheap concessions, and Dublin went for the jugular. And in those same games, Mayo struggled to get goals. They've, if you take Lee Keegan out of the equation, you know, they've barely ever scored a goal against Dublin in championship in that period. And even when they beat them 2 years ago, they did it with points. You know, there was no goals, and Dublin had a kind of complete meltdown in late and normal time and in extra time. So, I mean, this is a recurring feature, and it explains why Dublin are invariably tend to win the majority of these matches with Mayo.
Moving to Saturday then for a second, don't look at Kerry Tyrone, you know, similarly comprehensive on the scoreboard in the end. Why do you think Kerry were able to pull away with such ease by the end of the game?
Well, I mentioned earlier that I saw them against Louth. I covered that match, and you know, there is a certain amount to be put down to maybe Louth fatigue. You know, they have ascended through the ranks of football very quickly, and maybe they just sort of bottom out for this year at that point, and Kerry took advantage. But the big thing I took away from it was that their big players were in great form. David Clifford's excellence is routine now, and it was against Louth. Sean O'Shea was brilliant in at full forward, and we saw more of that yesterday. He was in great form. He was snarling his way around the place. He looked like he was taking everything personally that day. And they were well up, and he was sort of like going around starting fires everywhere, looking for ball, looking for possession, looking for work, looking for aggro even. Like, he was well up for it. Paddy Clifford was brilliant that day as well. And so I wasn't terribly surprised that it panned out the way it did. Doing the preview in the Independent for Saturday's paper. And, you know, the Paddy Conor Myler thing has been a running battle for a while. And Paddy was brilliant yesterday in that regard. And when he plays well, Kerry generally do play well. We're talking an awful lot about David, and rightly so. But Paddy sort of links it all together, I think. You know, he's always carrying the ball out of defence. Great kick pass or great vision. Can fit enough and agile and mobile enough to cover the ground, take points, score goals. Like, he can do a bit of everything. And he's very important to the way they play. So when those players are in that sort of form and Tyrone couldn't get the shackles on them, I think it was nearly inevitable what way that game was going to go, because Tyrone haven't looked like All-Ireland champions since the day they won the All-Ireland, really. They've had loads of different reasons for that. But I think yesterday, Frank, the form that they've shown in the last 2 years, they were just off it for whatever reason. And on paper, they're an awful lot better than that. They have the tools to trouble anyone. But the last 2 years, they just haven't been able to pull it together.
Yeah, Frank, how would you rank the contenders that are left then? Like, Kerry or Dublin, who do you have top of that list at the moment?
God. There's so little between them. As of Sunday morning, I would have said Kerry are definitely in the box seat. I'm not so sure now. I mean, Desi's great achievement so far anyway has been the level of competition he has recreated in a squad that had kind of lost an awful lot of that over the last 2 years. I mean, we saw yesterday where Kieran Kilkenny was one of four late changes. Obviously, this was the team they were going with from the outset. But, you know, when is the last time Kieran Kilkenny has not started a straight knockout championship match for Dublin? And he came on and he looked hungry and he was involved. One of the points came from a brilliant kick-out break that he got a hand to. He scored himself. He set up one for Dean Rock. So if you look at the players he was able to bring off the bench yesterday, I mean, he had Kilkenny, he had Jack McCaffrey, Paddy Small. I mean, Colly Baskell has re-emerged. It's almost like his third coming. Finally, he's established himself not just as a starter, but a really important player in that setup. So, I mean, there has been a kind of sense all year long that maybe this is one last hurrah for Dublin. But they looked so hungry in that second half yesterday that I definitely cannot write them out of the equation. I think they will beat Monaghan. I just don't think Monaghan will be able to score enough against them to kind of stay with them for, you know, bring it into a dogfight. So, and I would expect Kerry to beat Derry, even though it may be more difficult for them. Derry's form did not look great. I didn't think they didn't impress me really at all yesterday, I must admit. For whatever reason, they looked a bit leggy and just
I think that's just what Derry do, Frank, in fairness to them. You know, they kind of control the game.
I've seen them within that context play an awful lot better. And I suppose we're looking to see Derry, you know, show what they've shown in lots of other venues in Croke Park.
Mm.
Don't think they did enough of it yesterday. Now,
yeah, I was sort of, my impression of Derry was that they were playing well within themselves yesterday. And I've seen them a couple of times over, I've seen them several times over the last couple of years. You know, the big question mark now is, and Kieran Mina acknowledged it afterwards. He said, like, people are asking the question, are Derry in the elite bracket of teams? He says, and he says, that's fair. He says, because, you know, when it came to it, they hadn't done it. So the big question for Derry now next day is that when they played Galway in last year's All Ireland semi-final, they scored 1-6 and they were sort of like comprehensively pulled apart. They'll need to be in so much better than that against Kerry, particularly in this form. But they were kind of well in control of that game against Cork yesterday. The 1-4, the, you know, and trailing by 4 against Derry in that form is, you know, it's kind of like 6-7 points. And on top of that, they missed the penalty, or the penalty saved, Micheál Martin saved the penalty in injury time. So Derry were a lot more comfortable, I felt, in that game than the scoreline suggests. They were, like, even the Cork goal got them back to within one, and Derry pulled away again, or Derry hit back with their own goal immediately. They had a couple of more chances. Cork, you know, they had Cork shooting from positions that the Cork's return was poor. Cork shooting from positions and under pressure and making mistakes. So I think that, I think they'll be much better equipped this time around. I don't think they'll beat Kerry, but I do think they played well within themselves yesterday. And not a bad place to be, because, you know, they know how much improvement they have to do before the next one. But yeah, Derry were decent, as good as they needed to be. And you did feel like they could go to that next level.
Yeah, now they'll obviously, Shane McGuigan, you know, had probably one of his poorer games of a great summer.
Yeah,
four from freeze.
Yeah. But that's probably a good sign for Derry, because would they have done, how much would they have struggled last year if he had to have less influence? And, you know, we probably haven't talked about James McCarthy enough. He was absolutely incredibly good yesterday for me. But Conor Glass is sort of, you know, the tone setter for Derry as well. And he does so much stuff for them in terms of linking the play, moving it on. Like, he's so incredibly fit and strong that you see him, team players trying to go around him, and he can just track the run and make them turn back. And he's a huge addition for them. But yeah, I thought Derry had a bit in their back pocket yesterday.
And Frank, what about Monaghan, the one team that books the trend of, you know, the primary quarterfinal winners being eliminated, and it had to be them after the dramatic championship they've had already? I think two wins secured with the last kick of a ball, another draw with a last kick of a ball, and then even Conor McManus to rescue the game for them against Armagh, and then winning on penalties. Like, the Monaghan story, I know Dick Clerkett's not here with us, and he hates when people talk about, you know, Monaghan punching above their weight, or, you know, these great escapes. But sometimes cliches are cliches, because there is a lot of truth to them, and the way Monaghan are able to battle and stay in the fight is remarkable.
Well, I just think their calmness down the home straight of games is remarkable. Whether they're a county of 65,000 people or 265,000 people, they I think this was exemplified in the last play of extra time on Saturday night. I mean, I was just going through the GA Go tape again this morning, because I wanted to kind of confirm in my own head that, you know, they were within their rights to actually play that last free short and try to work the chance. Because 3 minutes of injury time had been called, and, you know, the McManus' equalising point came in the seventh. But there was nearly 3 minutes, there was 2 minutes and 50 seconds of a hold-up for an Armagh injury, while Monaghan waited to see what they were going to do. And it was that bit too far for probably Rory Began to have a chance. You know, it would have been a shot in a million for him to score a free from there. But in that moment, they had the wherewithal to work the chance and get the ball into the hands of the one player who needed to have it. And that was Conor McManus. And he did exactly the right thing to win the free, and then had the composure to draw, you know, to draw. And it was such fine margins. I mean, there was probably 15 seconds of injury time left. And McManus was fouled 13 seconds after Began played the free. I mean, it was just remarkable stuff. But you know, a week before that, Conor McCarthy had scored a brilliant point with the outside of his boot in the fifth minute of injury time to beat Kildare. And that was a game that, in lots of ways, they probably couldn't, should have lost. Kildare left several goals behind them, but Monaghan stayed in the fight. And they are just brilliant at doing that.
Donegal, would you give them much of a chance against Dublin? I did, before we, you know, started, you were just talking that you think they could make life difficult for Dublin.
Yeah, I think, like, Monaghan around the long time, their experience is hard earned, and you know the record in Croke Park isn't brilliant when it comes to championship games and knockout football. But I don't think, like I mentioned, the sort of goals that Monaghan or that Mayo coughed up. I don't think Monaghan will do that. I don't think you'll have that sort of lapses in concentration that they will just hand Dublin the initiative like that. I agree with what Frank said earlier. Will they score enough to beat them? It's hard to see it at the moment. It's hard to see it based on certainly the weekend's games. But yeah, like Monaghan have no hang-ups about anyone. And this is, hopefully we can cut this and send it to Dick. And that's one of their many strengths. You know what I mean? They don't worry. The reputations, they don't really care. They go out and do what they're going to do. They do a very slow, deliberate build-up. Armagh mirrored them the other day and they got over the line. And I just think they're quite, they're streetwise, they're smart. They always have this smattering of, if you go back through, say, when Banty first brought them on to the national consciousness and they're in All-Ireland semi-finals, they always have this little smattering of proper gold dust. So you go back to the, say, if you remember Tommy Freeman, Tommy had a couple of years where he was absolutely electric as an inside forward. You know, I'm going to have gone on that and for a long time now, Conor McManus has been this exceptional footballer, nationally lauded for how good he is. So along with all the functionality and the streetwise stuff and the physicality and the organisation and all that, to have that little bit of sort of X factor, you know, even like Jack McCarron can have brilliant days when the ball sticks to him and he swings it in that left foot. Darren Hughes drives them out. Like, you know, to have bits of everything, and even sometimes when it's going against them, you just see them keep on trucking on and trucking on and trucking on. So I would fully expect Monaghan to go in with a certain amount of belief that they're going to play the game on their terms and make life difficult for Dublin. They will think that they'll give themselves a full chance to get to an All-Ireland final. I'm not sure they'll get it done, but I don't. They won't roll over, and they will. They'll absolutely relish the shot. Some people might cower away from it. I think that Monaghan team, Monaghan of the last 10 years, doing as well as they are and everything with the resources that Dick doesn't like, being a smaller county, I think they will relish this on Saturday week.
Where are Armagh now, Frank? You know, their third penalty shootout defeat in around 12 months, you know, last year's quarterfinal, the Ulster final, now another quarterfinal. Like, it's the end of the year, number 9 for Kieran McGeaney. He's been there a very long time, and a team that's promised a lot, but they ultimately haven't really won any silverware under Kieran McGeaney, no provincial titles, and haven't got past the quarterfinal hump either. You know, what's his future, do you think, after another tough defeat?
It's a funny one, because you talk to people around Armagh, and the sense seems to be that Kieran McGeaney will be manager for as long as he wants. Not that everyone would necessarily agree with that in the county, but that just seems to be the narrative, you know. I mean, he is surely the unluckiest general out there, in one sense, you know, losing 3 penalty shootouts in 12 months. But at the same time, you know, I think they've only themselves to blame as well. There were a point up at halftime in a low-scoring dogfight on Saturday evening, but you were kind of, you know, what did better teams do over the weekend? They turned the screw straight after halftime. Kerry did it. Dublin did it. Derry probably did. You know, I thought Derry should have been more up at halftime, but they really kind of took that game away from Cork for most of the second half. Armagh allowed Monaghan to dictate the second half tempo for most of the remainder of normal time. They allowed it to stay a 1-point game in the melting pot right the way through. And then at the start of extra time, for probably 8 minutes, they had an extra man when Monaghan suffered what I thought was a kind of unlucky enough black card for Sean Jones. And they didn't press on in that period either. So they allowed, I'm not saying they allowed Monaghan to stay in the fight. Monaghan did that as well. But there's a sense with this Armagh team that they, you know, they don't max out on, you know, the players they have. Maybe the players aren't good enough. You can argue that maybe that at this stage they need a new sense of direction, because, you know, 9 years is a long, long time for this, you know, the same management team to be there without, you know, any silverware. Mm. But, you know, you feel sorry for them losing a penalty shootout. It's a terrible way to go out and all that. But why didn't they get the job done before that?
Yeah, so like it would strike me now, like the team that Kieran McGeaney was a part of that won that All-Ireland in 2002 had a lot of kind of footballing brains on it, and many guys who've gone into inter-county management either as managers or as coaches or selectors. And you know, Kieran McGeaney's almost been there 10 years, and without having the maybe the ultimate success of the show for it, do you think it is time for someone else to take it on and see what they can do with it?
Well, as always in these cases, I suppose you have to, you know, when people are talking about we need change, change for what? Change to who? Except Frank's point, he's there a long time. But I don't think there's any doubt that he has the buy-in of the players. And, you know, but for a small bit of luck, they could, their last 18 months could have been incredibly different. 9 seasons is a very long time. You don't see it. So, you know, there's the argument on that side. But I do kind of agree with the point Frank made there about are they maxing out. If you go back to that, was it Armagh Dublin in the league? And they played some absolutely brilliant football. They put Rian O'Neill on the edge of the square and they just lashed in angle balls on top of him. And like, he's so good that he was making even the ones that were ordinary passes into him, he was making something out of them. So you do wonder sometimes, did they make a mistake yesterday on Saturday in going for, in basically mirroring Monaghan? Maybe they felt they had to because Monaghan will hit you on the break or whatever, but thought maybe they had the option to change it up, certainly at some stage, change it up, try and play a little bit differently, and they didn't. They were also quite unlucky, you have to say, a couple of goal chances that they didn't take. So is that bad luck or poor execution, you know, whatever you're having yourself? So, yeah, I don't think, certainly for a while anyway, in Armagh, they'd be feeling anything other than a little bit sore, because to lose 3 times in a year on penalties is just like pure bad luck. You know, that's one of them like has to fall your way, you'd imagine. And they took some really good penalties at the weekend as well. But 3 times is remarkable. Like, just, you know, where do you can't even start to explain it or analyse that.
Well, I'd like to thank Dunica and Frank for joining me on this week's episode of the Throw-In Football Show. We will be back next week with another podcast. And in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.